Vision Radio Show with your host, Lonnie Clark. We stand together and accept that we now live in a world transformed by Fukushima. From 8 a.m. to 9 a.m. Pacific Standard Time, here on UCY.TV Radio, we relentlessly engage every ear that listens. We expose and confront the complete lack of accountability for the nuclear industry. Consider social engineering programs who view our bodies, minds, and souls as assets on a balance sheet. We discuss vital current issues, interview activists, and engage our audience in an effort to allow all voices to be heard. The Age of Vision Radio Show creates a venue that all will choose. We encourage our listeners to reclaim their power and their courage to take action and save our planet from the ravages of greed and indifference. Our actions matter. Every voice matters. We remind our listeners that happiness is resistance. Love is greater than fear.
Good morning, UCY.TV radio listeners. Thank you for joining us. Today is May 15, 2018, 8 o'clock in the morning here in Eugene, Oregon. It is kind of a fresh morning, but it is overcast, but we're getting to be summer, so that's kind of the good part. We're over the cold snaps. I like that. I want to thank our friends and affiliates at KEPW.org. And for those of you who are listening to KEPW 97.3 FM station, it's one of the very, very few. Like, I think there were 17 or 18 FM stations given out in 2016 or 17, and KEPW got one. So congratulations, and it's a new station building out. And I hope people in Eugene and the Springfield area will pay attention, kepw.org. You can go there and listen online, actually, if you're outside of that venue and you're listening to UCY.TV and you wonder what it's about. It's actually a really awesome little, very interactive radio station. They have Jana Thrift has been a guest on my show. She did she does Water for Life, and she also does survival resistance or something like that. I forget, but it's about giving voice to the houseless community, the homeless. It's an interview with activists and people that are actually houseless, what it's like and what life is like and how to, you know, what they need to share with the community. So pretty interesting show. Anyways, I want to thank you. I don't have a guest today, and I did this intentionally because it's been a long while since I was actually able to sort of, I don't know, just vent about the frustration that we have going on right now. I mean, I don't know if it's just venting, but goodness gracious, what's it going to take? I'm looking at the news, and it's seriously going downhill, and last night, I woke up in the middle of the night and I turned on Fox News. It was about 3:30 a.m. my time. And I thought, I'm going to turn this on because that's when they say that the president is watching them live. So I thought, I'm going to watch what the president watches. Oh my gosh, the lies. It was like this, I don't know, the host, the male host, he was the one on the far left, the older guy, and he was like, the liar on Saturday Night Live, right? He laid down a lie and then slathered it a little bit more with another lie and another lie. And, oh, my goodness. I actually called them up and told them they were immoral. So I guess that puts me on some list since the government and Fox are like this. Pinochet and, you know, what was the name of El Mercurio, you know? You know, the United States actually purchased El Mercurio. I think that was the name of it. The national newspaper down in Chile to propagate and promote Pinochet. So that was a tactic the CIA did. So this business with Fox and Trump is kind of old, you know. I mean, it is, it's quite effective, isn't it? I mean, there were people in Chile who defended Pinochet and thought he was worth it, and those people getting killed, they deserved it. It's for real. And they tolerated it until their cousins, their brothers, until it got out of control. Lots of people went. So that's where we're at, folks. And this is why, like, you know, this stuff coming down to this. Today's news in the nuclear front. So grab your cup of coffee and let's go. People say to me, how can you actually look at this stuff in the morning? For me, I like to look at it and get it out of the way and figure out what these rats are doing and how what phone call I need to make. Because that's, I mean, honestly, I am pretty much a keyboard activist because I work full time and I just have a lot going on. And there's not, I have gone to meetings, but it seems to me that they're about getting people to know about it and talking to them and taking in money. I don't know. There's always this taking in money thing that grabs me. I mean, if I'm going to go and ask for money, it's not an organization that I just joined. So listen to this story today, and we're going to tell you this is totally hilarious. They're saying, we wonder why it happened. Sichuan Airlines co-pilot sucked halfway out of the cockpit, captain says. The co-pilot of a Sichuan Airlines flight that was forced to make an emergency landing on Monday was sucked halfway out of the airplane after a cockpit windshield blew out, media reported, citing the aircraft's captain. Oh my gosh. Louis Chuanjin hailed a hero on the social media after having to land the Airbus A319 manually, told the Chengdu Economic Daily his aircraft had just reached a cruising altitude of 32,000 feet when the deafening sound tore through the cockpit. The cockpit experienced a sudden loss of pressure and a drop in temperature when he looked over and the cockpit's right windshield was gone. There was no warning sign. Suddenly, the windshield just cracked and made a loud bang. The next thing I know, my co-pilot had been sucked out, halfway out of the window, he was quoted as saying. Everything in the cockpit was floating in the air. Most of the equipment malfunctioned, and I couldn't hear the radio. The plane was shaking so hard I could not read the gauges. The co-pilot, who was wearing his seatbelt, was pulled back in. He suffered scratches and a sprained wrist, the Aviation Administration of China said, adding that one other cabin crew member was also injured in the descent. None of the plane's 119 passengers were injured. The Civil Aviation Administration of China said France's BEA Accident Investigation Agency and the Airbus would send staff to China to investigate, according to the CAAC News, which is affiliated to the aviation regulator. So I'm not going to finish reading the whole details of it, but, you know, they're trying to figure out what caused it. Incidents involving, listen to this, the cracked windshields do happen on a regular basis due to bird or lightning strikes, but one involving entire windshields coming off are rare. Not if you pay attention to the Wigner effect. I mean, Lorraine Murray told us 2 or 3 years ago on Radchik's show, we are going to see this very regularly. And this is going to happen, folks. This is not like, oh, let's scratch our head. The Manhattan Project secrecy is still going on. They don't want to talk about the negative effects of radioactivity in the atmosphere. Because where's all that gas going? How long has it been out there? 24,500 years is the half-life of plutonium, folks. Half-life. Meaning, it's still there. The plutonium they blew up on us when around the time right after I was born. I mean, I was born in 55, so they were doing nuclear testing during those periods of time. Dr. Busby says the worst period of time to be born was 57 to 62 in terms of in utero exposure. And that's the worst part. It's the in utero. Like, the worst part is what's happening to the children who are being born today, or like my grandchildren. I talked about this the other day. We know for a fact something is going to happen to them. It's not an accident. So here's another one. Listen to this. This the news is in this front is just almost laughable, because it's almost as if we have to pretend we don't know the answers and then ask the questions. Do we know? We don't know the answers. So we need to go retest and re-believe all of it all over again. North Korea has begun dismantlement of the Pyongyi re-nuclear test site. I bet they did. It was called last September when it blew up and created a big 50-foot hole. After initial reporting of plans to allow experts and media personnel to observe the closing of the North Korea's Pyongyi re-nuclear test site, now scheduled for next week, commercial satellite imagery from May 7 provided the first definitive evidence that dismantlement of the site was already well underway. Okay. Several key operational buildings, support buildings located just outside the north, west, and south portals have been razed since our last analysis. There was a 50-foot hole that they blew up last summer, folks, at their test site. I reported on it. China said if that mountain collapsed, it would release enough contamination to poison the entire northern hemisphere. And they didn't say northern, but it said to destroy a hemisphere. I think it's A. Some of the rails of the mining carts, which led from the tunnels to their respective spoil piles, have apparently been removed. Apparently. Additionally, some carts seem to have been tipped over and or disassembled, and several small shed buildings around the site have been removed. Other more substantial buildings around the facility remain intact, including the two largest buildings at the command center and the main administrative support area. Moreover, no tunnel entrances appear to have been permanently closed. And this may be because on May 12, the official Korean Central News Agency announced that the final dismantlement of the Pyongyi nuclear test ground would be witnessed by foreign journalists and involving the collapse of all tunnels with explosions, blocking its entrance, and removing all observation facilities, research buildings, and security posts. Right. Like, we believe those are the only ones that he's going to have. Like, oh, gosh. Oh, you know, they're just giving us stories so they can write something in the newspaper 100 years from now, if we have 100 years from now. Which leads me to another train of thought. North Portal, between April 20th and May 7, 2018, the probable engineering office building and a possible instrumentation shed located just out the North Portal, where the last 500 ground nuclear tests have been conducted, were razed along with at least two smaller buildings or sheds. Part of the roof was removed from the probable compressor building, which evidently provided ventilation to the tunnel system under Mount Mantap. A possible airline which connected that building to the North Portal may have also been removed. So this whole story is all just conjecture. They have no idea, but they are reporting it as if this is total proof. Pictures, pictures, pictures. Significant changes took place at the North and South Portals between April 20th and May 7th, consistent with site closure. So they have pictures where they've removed buildings and they've removed structures and things like that, and raise and knock things down to get ready for this. This is a shakedown, folks. There is something coming. I do not know about you, but I don't feel good about this. Well, there, I'm way down on the article. This is quite a long article. This is, who did this? 38north.org. I wonder who they are. Cabling removed, while there may have been other reports, allegedly from U.S. intelligence sources, of some cabling for instrumentation or electrical service having been removed from the tunnels, this type of activity was not apparent in the imagery from May 7th. Yeah, so who is this, people? 38.org. Let's look them up because this reporting was pretty dodgy. Who is that? 38.org. That was a weird story. I found that story on Google, and that was the only one that there was. Informed analysis of events in and around North Korea. Oh, okay. That's what that's all about. Okay. So it is a non-profit of people who pay attention to this, but they don't quite know. Okay. Let's move on. I also want to talk to you guys about these small nuclear reactors. This is, you know, they are being built. That is the issue. I'm going to read to you this thing, this story that I read, and inside of this story is a bunch of questions. Small modular nuclear reactors will soon face a moment of reckoning, May 14th, 2018. Last month's first ever small reactor design approval could usher in a new era for nuclear power, provided the technology can live up to the hype. The U.S. Nuclear Regulatory Commission, NRC, Phase 1 review approval of the small nuclear reactor designed from a Portland, Oregon-based NuScale Power, means the technology now has a realistic chance of being up and running within a decade. In a press release, NuScale said its first operational products for Utah Associated Power Municipal Power System, UAMPS, could be hooked up to the grid by the mid-2020s, while Bloomberg reported that the company was aiming for commercial operations in 2026. The reactor developer next has to get NRC design certification application approval, and customer UAMPS needs a combined construction and operating license. Oh, I see. What does that say? The reactor developer next has to get NRC design certification application approval, and Custer UAMPS need a combined construction and operating license. NuScale Directors of Communication Miriam Nabazad told GMT. Miriam Nabazad. But Josh Fried, founder and leader of the Clean Energy Program at center-left think tank Third Way, said NuScale has already changed the global SMR picture. Advanced nuclear has always been discussed in the context of being 10 years away from licensing. Throughout the 1990s and the early part of this century, it never got to that point, he said. NuScale marks a significant change because they are building components, testing pieces of a new reactor, and are engaged with the NRC in a very methodical process that is moving forward, said Fried. They've got a site selected and a partner at UAMPS. Yet this project is very tangible. UAMPS. How do we say this, folks? UAMPS. UAMPS? UAMPS? I don't know. When it goes live, the UAMPS plant will be a definitive test of whether nuclear has a future in many Western economies. In Europe and the U.S., the industry is on the wane, mounting a re-argued PR campaign to claw back fans and betting heavily on SMRs to regain credibility. That means that the UAMPS project, which is set to have a dozen megawatt NuScale SMR modules, will have to buck recent nuclear new build trends by coming in on time and on budget. And critically, it will have to be competitive with the other generation sources built 8 years from now. Nabizad said that the estimated overnight cost of the UAMPS project was $2.9 billion, and its target levelized energy cost of energy was $65 per megawatt hour. Hang on 1 second, folks. For comparison, the International Renewable Energy Agency predicted that by 2020, more than half a decade ahead of the UAMPS project going live, onshore wind will be hitting a LCOE of $50 per megawatt hour, and solar will be at $60 per megawatt hour. Naturally, NuScale should be able to point to the fact that SMRs do not suffer from intermittency as a reason for paying a premium for nuclear energy. Well, neither do the other, solar and wind do not have intermittency, especially solar does not anymore. The NuScale design, unlike traditional reactors, is supposed to be capable of a certain amount of load following, which could help it compete with gas plants. The problem is that neither of these arguments is much of a deal clincher at the moment, and it is unclear if they will be in 8 years' time. Gas is beating nuclear not because of its load following abilities, but because markets, particularly in the U.S., are not set up to fully reward the high volume carbon emission reductions that reactors can deliver. Well, I argue against that because they use a lot of carbon in maintenance. And with wind and solar tied storage plummeting in cost, it is unclear to what extent intermittency will be an issue for intermittent renewables 8 years from now. All these factors could fuel concerns that SMRs may never be a viable technology. They are not a viable technology. That's my injection. Freed and NuScale and others in the growing cohort are in a growing cohort of would-be SMR developers are well aware of these challenges. The fact that cost is such a big consideration is a substantial shift from the development of the early light water reactors, he said. They were entering into a market in the United States that was heavily regulated, and utilities had a monopoly, said Freed. The business side of NuScale is being built with the recognition that we are, in the U.S. and the developed economies around the world, in a very different environment now. So what does that mean? That these are not going to be heavily regulated? But even if NuScale and its brethren can reignite interest in nuclear across the U.S. and Europe, it may still face a threat from within its own industry. While the NRC's experience with NuScale is expected to streamline the permitting of other SMR designs, it will be at least a decade until U.S. SMRs start hitting the ground in any meaningful manner. Meanwhile, Russians and Chinese are building SMRs today. Ooh, get afraid. You know why? Because they don't have all these. The Chinese do not have big nuclear power plants. But they're going to be building them. Everett Redman, Senior Technical Advisor for New Reactor and Advanced Technology at the Nuclear Energy Institute, outlined the scale of the problem at a roundtable discussion for reporters last month. China is bringing online this year high-temperature gas and pebble bed reactors, commercial ones, he said. By the time the United States has a high-temperature gas pebble bed reactor operating, the Chinese will have 10 years of operating experience behind them. Oh, so that means that we're so far behind, we've got to hurry and catch up. See, this is what they're... Mr. Rick Perry, they're like slathering up to try to get this done. By the way, H.R. 3053 passed the House and is on its way to the Senate, folks. So the nuclear waste disaster bill that wants to privatize nuclear waste is on its way to the Senate. And it sounds like it's going to get rubber stamped unless we speak up and we stand out against it. So bet your bottom dollar we're going to have more on that one in the next few weeks if I can help it. Well, I think I can help it, so I think I will get that going on. Oh, so the denial of everyone in our culture about the harm that nuclear is causing is off the charts still. We cannot allow these SMRs to be built. Didn't you read inside of here, like, the fear-mongering and some of the... What was this statement about? We are entering into a market in the United States that was heavily regulated, and utilities had a monopoly. The business side of NuScale is being built with the recognition that we are in the U.S. and in developed economies around the world in a very different environment now. What did he mean by that? What did he mean by that, right? This is just beyond comprehension. And then we have this little goodie that came out just 6 hours ago from the Daily News Miner, the voice of Interior Alaska, May 15th, 2018. Let me get some water. Hang on just a second. Okay, Fairbanks, Alaska. It's a picture of a big box. It looks like just a regular big box. It looks like a storage silo. Does not look like a nuclear power facility. The SM-1A nuclear power plant in Fort Greeley is seen in a historical photo. The plant was shut down in 1972. After decades in storage status, the plant is scheduled to be decommissioned over the next 10 years. So this is where these go. An Army Corps of Engineers team is planning the formal decommissioning of the only nuclear power plant ever built in Alaska, Fort Greeley SMA-1A plant. The SM-1A plant provided steam and electricity to the Army post near Delta Function, off and on between 1962 and 72. It was one of eight experimental projects to test the use of small nuclear power plants at remote installations, SMRs, folks. It's expected to take about 10 years to plan, contract out, and complete the SM-1A cleanup, according to the Baltimore-based team from the Army Corps of Engineers that came to Fort Greeley for meetings last month. One particular challenge of decommissioning SM-1A is that the steam plant previously powered by the nuclear reactor is still in use, although today it's powered by a diesel-fired power plant. As we go through the planning process and ultimately through implementation, safety of the workers is a number one priority, said Chris Gardner, a spokesman of the Army Corps of Engineers, in a telephone interview from Baltimore. There will be a lot of coordination that will need to take place to minimize any impacts to the continued regular operation of the steam plant. Fort Greeley is mostly as a cold weather siting test site in the 1960s and 70s. In 1995, it was ordered shut down as part of a congressionally authorized nationwide base closure and realignment process. It was resurrected several years later. However, since 2003, has housed most of the U.S. ground-based mid-course missile interceptors, the country's primary defense against intercontinental ballistic missiles. Now, why would they have the primary defense right where a closed nuclear power plant was, if they didn't use it for nuclear weapons. The SM-1A plant was successful at powering and heating Fort Greely, but was eventually deactivated because it was more expensive to operate than conventionally diesel-powered plant.
Oh, Lord.
Let me see where we're at. When SMA-1 was shut down in 1972, the Army chose to place the facility in a safe storage status instead of formally decommissioning it. The highly enriched uranium fuel and waste were shipped out of Alaska, and radioactive components of the reactor were encased in cement. Right, you believe that? The Army chose this temporary method of mothballing the facility out of hope that within a relatively short amount of time, significant quantities of radioactive waste would decay to a safer non-radioactive state, according to the Army Corps of Engineers website about the SM-1A. And then there's a link to this thing that tells us about it. Let's see if I can open it up, but maybe we'll go there later. Later studies showed that the volume of radioactive waste wasn't decreasing as expected, and that a more hands-on approach was needed to clean up the plant. The increasing cost of nuclear waste disposal also motivated the Army to begin cleaning up the site. There's no estimate yet for the cost of decommissioning SM-1A, but such a project for a similar plant was budgeted at $66.4 million. So if it goes over budget, it could cost like what, $100 million or $120 million? A time for the project indicates that the request for proposals will be sent out by 2021, and with a contract awarded in 2022, the actual cleanup work is expected to take about 5 years. Oh God, that makes me sick. The Army Corps of Engineers is decommissioning other experimental nuclear power plants of Fort Belvoir, Virginia, and aboard the Sturgis, a former World War II Liberty ship in Galveston, Texas, that was made into a floating nuclear plant and used in Panama in the 1960s and 70s. Wow. So it says here that the Army Corps of Engineers website has a link for more about the Fort Greely nuclear power plant. Wow. Again, there's a lot of assumptions made in this whole thing that it, you know, this is amazing that they just put it into temporary closure. They just didn't, instead of decommissioning it. That is, these things are just so, I don't know. It's happening right underneath us. This is the thing in terms of what I have been going through, and I don't know many, maybe many of you go through the same thing in terms of how do you change your life, how much, and in what way do you change your life to stop this? Because we look around at like so-called anti-nuke activists and people who are like really speaking out and pushing back and doing things. Like Donna Gilmore, it has consumed her life. Like, literally, she's now considered an expert in nuclear waste and canisters in the United States. She's literally, just because she started using government documents and, you know, refused to speak hysterically like I do all the time. You know, I make these wild statements like I did throughout the show earlier. I recognize that these are not conventional statements I say, but, you know, I'm willing to say the thing that everybody's thinking. Because this is outrageous. We have got to, like, figure out a way to, like, make this stop before they just stop themselves from destroying everything on the planet. I mean, okay, I'm going to read to you about this SM-1A nuclear power plant overview really quick, just because I want you to understand what we're dealing with, right? The SM-1A was a 20.2 megawatt thermal pressurized water reactor that could supply 72,000 pounds of saturated steam per hour. The reactor used uranium oxide, highly enriched uranium-235, and clad in stainless steel as fuel. Due to the high operating cost and the projected cost of replacing the reactor pressure vessel, a decision was made to shut the plant down by 1968. Okay. The decision was reversed when an annealing process was utilized to extend the vessel's lifetime. Additionally, it was thought that that continued operation would offer opportunities for experience and information about the reliability and lifetime of nuclear plants. By modifying an unused core procured for the portable medium power PM2A nuclear power plant in Greenland, and using other spare fuel elements, an additional core was assembled, prolonging the active use of the SM1A for 5 more years. The final shutdown was performed on the SM1A reactor in March 1972, in accordance with the SM1A decommissioning plan, as approved by the Army Reactor Systems Health and Review Committee, ARCHS, A-R-C-H-S. This consists of removal of the nuclear fuel, minor decontamination, shipment of prepacked radioactive waste, entombing certain reactor components, vapor container, waste tanks, demineralizer room, sealing the pressure vessel, installing appropriate warning signs and monitoring devices. Certain areas were maintained as restricted areas for radiation safety concerns. This method of decommissioning was selected due to the low initial cost and low personnel radiation exposure. Future remediation was to take place at a time when radiation levels and quantity of radioactive waste were significantly reduced due to radioactive decay. Hang on just one second, folks. I'm going to get back to this in a minute. Okay. Okay. In 1995, Fort Greeley was placed on the base realignment and closure list. As part of the BRAC, B-R-A-C, certain areas associated with the SM1A were investigated and remediated. Investigated and remediated. What does that mean? Remediated. Three specific areas were released under a record of decision, BRAC Site 90, BRAC Site 132, and Wastewater Pipeline 21 plus 25. The AHA process supplies information to support the decommissioning study process outlined in Army Regulations 50-7. This process is performed by the USACE at the direction of the Army Reactor Office, to better define disposal activity costs. So this is a very interesting thing that they say what they did. This is what they stored. I wonder what they did with these waste tanks. Vapor certain reactor components, right? Entombing certain reactor components. Vapor container, waste tanks, and demineralizer room. And sealing the pressure vessel and installing appropriate warning signs. So they just contained everything. So now what are they going to do? I wonder if these are, this was in 1972. I wonder how thick the tanks were in 1972. Let's hope they were thicker than the half inch they're currently being stored in right now. For goodness sakes. Wow. That is the articles, folks, that I just found on Google. This is not even me looking for things. I just put in like a search thing, a search request on Google that says nuclear. This is mainstream. If it pops up on mainstream, it's everywhere. So the question is, how do we begin And I guess maybe this is really the issue. We're seeing a clearer picture. Maybe that's where we're going on this one. Can you tell I'm thinking this through with you right now, live on the air, 8:39 in the morning in Eugene, Oregon. And thank you, KEPW listeners. We really appreciate that you're tuning in on your radio show. I think that my show is live in Eugene, Oregon on Mondays at 6 p.m. and on Tuesdays at 10 and Thursday at 10 p.m. They delayed it because I think the topic's a little heavy to be driving to work with, which it might be, but I don't know. I drive to work with it. This is my morning drive. As soon as I get off the radio, I go to work. So I don't know. I think it's important for us to talk about it. I don't mind waking up in the morning and going, okay, what are they lying to us about again? Because pick any topic. You can go to like any of them, the science, medical, politics, business. They're feeding us what they want us to hear, which is why I was kind of so outraged. I could not believe the Fox News this morning. Literally, the guy from Fox News said, Hamas told all of the Palestinians to come to the border and bring their guns and overthrow Israel, like, and to invade. First off, it's their border. They have a right to stand on their border. Israel has no right to tell the Palestinians, if you come close to the border, we're going to shoot you. They were shooting children in the legs. Thousands of people got injured because they weren't shooting to kill. They were shooting people in the legs and injuring them, telling them to stay away. But they're on their own side of the border. They were not trying to cross the border. So this is seriously ridiculous. I mean, and they're throwing rocks. They don't have guns. They cannot get guns. Hamas, the army has guns, but the average citizen does not have guns. This is ridiculous. That's why the children throw rocks. The children get engaged in Palestine because they've seen their fathers being defeated, their uncles, their brothers being defeated, because if they dare speak up, they get tortured in the prisons of Israel. They get picked up and murdered. It's outrageous, honestly. And this is the world that we're living in. I mean, seriously, they're allowing all of these coverages. The reason I read you this story about North Korea was not because they're closing their things. It's because North Korea's weapons site in September. Okay, I'm going to just Google this. North Korean, this is how easy it is, nuclear weapons test in September 2017. And we should see that there was a big collapse of the tunnel. Conducted its sixth nuclear test on September 3rd, 2017, stated that it had tested a thermonuclear weapon. It reported a 6.3 magnitude earthquake not far from North Korea's Punggye-ri nuclear test site. Gee, and now we're lauding them. Trump is like saying, oh, see, they're doing whatever they can do to help us. They're going to negotiate with us and close their nuclear test sites. No, they're not. It fell apart before. It is beyond comprehension, the idiocracy in this nation, the conversations that people are allowing. John Bolton is the presidential advisor, the man who never saw a war he didn't like. Oh, that was another thing that Fox News liar said on the television this morning. He went from Hamas is telling people to bring their weapons and attack Israel to this is all Iran's fault. Iran is funding Hamas. So now we have to, Iran is the enemy. Iran is the enemy. Iran is the enemy. Like he repeated that like several times. It was like boom, boom, boom. Seriously immoral behavior going on Fox News. Like I have to say I can't even, it's all I can do to stomach the MSNBC guy, Joannika or whatever her name is, Ika or something like that. Joannika, I think her name is. But for the Fox News liars, I just can't deal with them. But man, I decided to do it, and boy, was it a big one. Okay, September 14th, Washington Post. This is a story. Nuclear test draws warning of, let's see, which one? New York Times, CNN. These are things that you can easily pull up, you know, right here. It's still producing aftershocks. Okay, so Let's see what CNN. It's shaped here as Washington Post. Let's see what the Washington Post said then. It's kind of a lefty newspaper, but it reshaped the mountain above it. Now, what do you think? I mean, honestly, I think I actually read this on air. This was the story that I read on air. North Korea carries out its nuclear tests in a complex of tunnels in the Punggye-ri site, and images of its mountains, in the case of Mount Mantap, can give experts a sense of how the device was tested and exactly how powerful it was. A picture of satellite images on September 3rd showed a significant changes to Mount Mantap's peak elevation. Before the test, Mount Mantap was 2,205 meters high. The mountain has since diminished in height. You can see the explosion visibly displaces the mountain, which demonstrates both how large the explosion was, but also that it occurred in the same tunnel complex as the preceding four nuclear tests. This is useful because the relationship between the size of the explosion and the magnitude of the seismic signals is sensitive to the overburden, how much rock is above the explosion. Wow. Yeah, they have pictures of it, and you can see the difference. The device, which North Korea described as a hydrogen bomb capable of being placed on a ballistic missile, was the most powerful it has tested to date. Original estimates had put its yield at 100 kiloton range, but updated seismic data analyzed the experts put it closer to a whopping 250 kiloton, or 17 times more powerful than the bomb that flattened Hiroshima. This is the nuclear power plant that they are say that they are apparently cleaning up. 38 North, this is probably Kim Jong-un's little newspaper. That's interesting. So they're putting out propaganda for us to report on because we have to like them because they're so nice. Safety verification questions hang over North Korea's plan to close the nuclear site. 8 hours ago by Reuters. It really is like we have to pretend we don't know the answers and then give people money to investigate it. It's just about money, money, money. It is beyond comprehension, folks. I wanted to read to you this poem by Lao Tzu. I usually do it earlier in the show, but I thought it might be a good way to round out all this, like, stuff that, I mean, when I just wake up and look at the morning news, and I consider Google completely mainstream news, but you have to think about it critically, like some of the things that were said in there. We, now the SMRs, the United States used to be highly regulated, and now it's not. They're counting on H.R. 3053 passing the Senate, folks, because H.R. 3053 deregulates the nuclear industry and privatizes it all. That's the big win. We will no longer. Jerome goes on about this, how we don't have control over the nuclear waste. And technically, he's right. They are subcontracted out. But the United States still has complete authority over it still. With H.R. 3053, that puts it technically into the hands of private individuals. And it's considered a cost savings plan. We're saving money. Come on. So again, The Way of Life by Lao Tzu, translated by Witterbeiner. It's number 21. It's not a very long. I look for poems that aren't very long because we are on the radio and people lose interest. You mean you guys aren't totally enthralled about talking about how the nuclear liars are perpetuating the Manhattan Project and blindsiding us all completely and brainwashing our children and our families? Gee whiz. Listen to this. Number 21. The surest test if a man be sane is if he accepts life whole as it is, without needing by measure or touch to understand the measureless, untouchable source of its images, the measureless, untouchable source of its substances, the source which, while it appears dark emptiness, brims with a quick force farthest away and yet nearest at hand, from oldest time unto this day, charging its images with origin. What more need I know of the origin than this? Don't you wish the nuclear liars would have actually, or as Dave Parrish called them, the bad guys, would actually read Lao Tzu? That might make them slow in their tracks to, like, decimate the planet, don't you think? I do. I do. I do completely. I wanted to get out the Poison Power book, folks. And if you have not read, I know it's difficult for people to read a book. This is why I read this book on my YouTube channel. One of my subscribers, TJ Washington, has suggested that I reread it again because it's several years later, and frankly, he's right. I probably do understand it better. I would read the book better. When I first read this book, Poison Power, I was learning. I have to say, when I first read that book on my YouTube channel, I was shocked. I would read like 3 or 4 pages a day, maybe 5 pages a day. And it took me about 3 months of consistently reading every night. The lies that we are allowing to happen, and we continue to allow to happen. I mean, it's incomprehensible. Like, here we are once again. Let's go see what nuclearnews.net says. How about that? Because they do a really good job of, you know, it's sad because we used to, those of us that are Fuku fighters used to be able to go to E&E News, right? And not anymore. And we'll go to Donna Gilmore's page. These are my two go-to pages, Donna Gilmore's page and Nuclear News. So that's SanOnofreSafety.org. And let's see what her first topic. I wonder if she I know I got emails. Yeah, it is. The Nuclear Regulatory Commission approves unsafe nuclear waste storage. They approve thin wall steel canisters known to be susceptible to short term cracking. Wow. Okay, and let's see what the nuclear news says. Oh, great. Nuclear weapons for Saudi Arabia theme for May 2018. Thank you, Sean and Noel, and I mean Christina McPherson and Hervé Courtois. Thank you for this newspaper. It's delightful to have you guys telling us how it is. Listen to this. We have about 10 minutes left. I think we can get through this. Saudi Arabia have been itching for an attack on Iran. That would be a dangerous move by either of those states. But hey, what if you get America to do this on their behalf? With Trump surrounding himself with belligerent advisors like Mike Pompeo and John Bolton, and with Trump's son-in-law, Jared Kushner, cozying up to Israel and Saudi Arabia, there's a chance, every chance, that the USA will move closer to the military brink. That is the course there, Sean. That is the course. They are dying to do it. Oh, Christina McPherson wrote this. The regime's brutality towards... Let me go back... I think we have enough time to read this little, I think it's an opinion piece, but I'll still read it because it's quite actually real. After all, Trump's recent warnings to Iran that if it started enriching uranium, there will be very severe consequences and something will happen. Of course, it's a different story for the Trump and the USA. When it comes to letting the Saudi Arabians enrich uranium, Westinghouse has been keen to sell U.S. nuclear technology to Saudi Arabia, and the Trump administration is writhing to try to bypass the 123 rule, which prohibits uranium enrichment. Saudi Arabia has been quick to military attack in the past, Bahrain in 1994 and 2011, and Yemen recently. The regime's brutality towards its own citizen should surely give the world pause to think about how it might behave towards other people when it's in possession of nuclear bombs. Cruelty and beheadings are normal for crimes, not only for murders, but for apostasy, blasphemy, and atheism. Of course, super salesman Donald Trump would find this irrelevant, indeed encouraging. After all, 12 months ago, Trump visited Riyadh, returning with a $350 billion arms contract for America. Nuclear power for Saudi Arabia becomes an absurd idea when you consider that Saudi Arabia is not only the Saudi Arabia of oil, but also of sunshine. Their motivation for nuclear weapons is clear. Wow, that's a pretty strong statement, Christina. Wow. Fukushima boys fought back. Look at this. This is really sad. This is dated May 13th, 2018. But Fukushima boy fought back, helping win a court victory that brought compensation for evacuees from the nuclear disaster. Let me see how much time this is. There, it's a long story. I would recommend that you go there. It talks about the life in Fukushima and the disasters and the harassment that they got. Fukushima nuclear disaster, from a foreign perspective, German film was shot inside the exclusive zone. This is the title. May 12, 2018. Greetings from Fukushima, a movie on the aftermath of the 2011 earthquake and tsunami that hit Japan, was shot on location with director Doris Dore, even carrying a Geiger counter to monitor the radiation levels. Yeah, well, that won't protect you. There have been numerous responses by Japanese artists and filmmakers to the earthquake that hit Japan in 2011 and the subsequent tsunami. By contrast, Greetings from Fukushima, a 2016 feature by German director Doris Dore, gives a foreigner's perspective to the disaster and its aftermath. The film is also known as Fukushima Mon Amour, a reference to Alain René's 1959 classic Hiroshima Mon Amour, which was set in the devastation of the atomic bomb. Dore's film was a straightforward structure than René's elliptical work. In fact, Dore does not focus on the wider impact of the tsunami, instead limiting the story to the relationship between a troubled German girl and a grumpy Japanese woman, both of whom are trying to come to terms with the events from their past. That's an interesting little movie. So it's actually a protagonist with a foreigner there. Interesting. And here's a story on nuclearnews.net. Saudi Arabia is seeking to enrich its own uranium. Not seeking, folks. It will. This is the thing. Saudi Arabia is the most frightening government to own this stuff because they're very much like a dictatorship, kind of like the excuses that we say our country is at odds with North Korea. But the selling of this North Korea thing, I keep coming back to that. Like, they're acting like North Korea is actually doing something to help the situation when, in fact, they had a big, huge nuclear explosion that collapsed this nuclear test facility in September. So why are we being fed this line of junk? I mean, I guess it's just a power play. For the same reason we're not talking about this small nuclear reactor. This is kind of scary. It's written by Sam Freeman at the Newsminer. I wonder what the process is going to be, and I wonder up there in Alaska how much contamination it's already given out there, what it's like. Because Fort Greeley, let's see, we have about, how long do I have? Well, my goodness sakes, we have about 45 seconds left. I want to thank everybody who listens to our radio show. And we think it's really important that we at least pay attention to what's going on. Even if it turns out we can't stop it, we can at least learn to protect ourselves, eat right, stay off of chemicals, really do your best to stay happy. That's what I mean by putting your courage feet on, taking action, facing life bravely, even if we don't want to. But we have to. It's our life. This is it. We're in the stew. So put your courage feet on. Thank you, KEPW. Thank you, UCY.TV. And we will talk with you guys later.